We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is The Instigators with Andrew Peters and Greg Rabe. Instigators.
Yep, we're down to one camera. Instigators live at Fox Valley Club for the Danny Gare and Friends Units Golf Tournament. We're all familiar with Units, and with me today again,
yes,
Duffer, Brian Duff at Duffer Sabres. I'm at the Instigator 76. If you feel the need to tweet,
1 week of me and you're down to one camera. There's a connection.
Well, something's happening here.
Yeah.
You know, we're going downhill in a hurry. So, luckily, we are to the ninth green. Yeah, we are right to the ninth green. Yes, and we're at ninth green. We're at the Fox Valley Club and Danny Gare's golf tournament taking place here today. Yeah. It's Units Donate Life, and Danny will be on with us at about 10:30. So, okay, we'll be able to chat with him again and talk to him a little bit about the tournament, who's here. Also going on, a lot going on. We have a lot to recap, and not just hockey. And one of the hockey topic that we will get to is JJ Remuda. How long does a Stanley Cup window stay open for top cup contenders? So we'll have that discussion. But so much happened over the weekend. Something else that's going on locally. I know you, my friend, a little sore today.
Who said that?
A little sore today. Duffer's a little sore today. I told him. I warned him. I played last week. I don't know what day it was, Wednesday or Thursday, but
Wednesday, because you totally didn't tell anybody.
It was kind of a surprise. Yeah, it was a surprise attack. But I went and I played.
You didn't play again?
No. The guys are playing this morning. There's a game this morning.
The finale happening right now at Harbor Center.
Yeah, the 11. And I heard it was as of yesterday, they were at 1.6 million, shy.
Which was Amy's goal, right, when she was on with us last week.
Yeah. We called out to a few heavy hitters on the show, just kind of, and said, donate $100,000, and we got them there.
Yeah.
How are you feeling today? How was the game?
Pretty good. I mean, we had a terrific game playing for Camp Good Days against Make-A-Wish. It was awesome. Our goaltender, Mike, was amazing. And I had a terrific D partner in Andy Gardner, so my job was made simple. It was stay at home and do
– right where you belong.
Right where I belong.
Yeah.
I was asked to play right defense. I said, there's too many in this town. But but hey. I got stuck with that position, and honestly, I've never played a game, let alone 20-minute periods, 50-minute periods, whatever. I've never played a game where I've been less inclined to do anything offensively in my life. But it was actually kind of fun. And what I laughed at was anytime Andy went up the ice and I happened to gravitate to the left side to cover, bad things happen. So I need to be a true stay-at-home right side defenseman.
Stay in your lane.
Yeah,
Stay on your side. What time was your game?
Noon to 3 yesterday.
Did you guys win?
Yeah.
You did.
Double-digit win.
Speaking of
winning.
That's
why I lauded our goaltender because.
Well, was it Mike Chase?
No.
Oh, you said Mike. I thought it was Mike Chase, whose son Owen is, he had a great speech the opening night. Mm-hmm. And
Mike's been, I feel like his presence has, Mike and Owen, has been really significant and just well woven throughout this whole thing. You know, we talk about the Lesikowskis an awful lot for obvious reasons. And Mr. Lesikowski Sr. Yesterday, because his son was playing against us
see him?
The Shiner. I know. So that's why I was bringing it up. But with the Chases and Owen, it's again, everything about this event has grown in stature, and especially from the marketing side. So I think visually, you really, you you can't not feel it now when you go into Harbor Center, but especially on social media because those images translate so well. So, you know, if anything, and we've lauded them for all the things that they've done for getting this event off the ground and to the level that it's at now. But I dare say the marketing side of it should not be overlooked. It has been tremendously displayed throughout the last couple of weeks and, of course, the months leading up to it.
It comes to a close today, the final shift taking place right now. During your shift yesterday, what time did it start?
Noon to 3 at Harbor Center. Yep.
Noon to 3. There was something going on in sports that was absolutely historic. Yeah. And I think that, you know, when Tiger Woods came back and won another tournament this year, the sports world stopped and recognized, you know, what took place and how greatness just kind of came full circle. And here he is back on top again. Well, yesterday, I feel like we were treated to one of the greatest sport, not tennis matches, sporting events, two competitors that just would not quit. And it wasn't even the caliber of the players and the greatness of the players. It was the never quit. It was it was everything. I mean, it was everything that you want in sports for a movie ending, for anything. This was it. I mean, it was absolutely incredible what we witnessed
sports
yesterday.
Presented quite a number of storylines this weekend for Hollywood to sit there and think we could never do this justice. And Federer, Djokovic, and it has been those two often. It has been Federer, Nadal often. It has been Nadal, Djokovic often. The fact that it continues to be played out at this level, it does go beyond tennis. And it spawns the conversation, and we actually had it in the room after our game because people were just finally being able to digest what was the final score. And I didn't know about the rule change. So
just this
year. So when Adam was – our captain was saying it ended 13-12, I'm like, well, how is that possible? That's not what they do at Wimbledon. And I wasn't tuned into the rule change. And so then it was funny to read about all that kind of stuff, even the players maybe being a little unsure as it was going on at one point. But the fact that literally if it had been allowed to continue the way it has previously, how much longer do you think that match would have gone? Would it have gone 20-18? Would it have gone 26-24? Would they have played for 7 hours? If they're that close, how would we have ever gotten
Was a chance Federer was going to lose it in the fourth set. I mean, you can go all the way back. I didn't turn it on until I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend like I'm some, you know, tennis expert. But my father was a tennis player and a very good one. And every year, I mean, I can tell you how many Grand Slam finals matches we've watched with my dad at the cottage or just at the house, just, you know, the U.S. Open leading up to training camp is always a huge thing. And tennis is, I mean, you just go on social media yesterday and you read how many hockey players and everyone were tweeting about the tennis match. And it's such a great sport. And so many hockey players love watching tennis. I mean, a lot of people love watching tennis, but we're a hockey show. Mm-hmm. But I've watched, I can't tell you how many Grand Slam finals all the way back to when Federer was just a 16, 17-year-old kid just coming on the scene. And granted, he's outlived, by the way, outlasted so many great players that came on the scene while he was already in it. Yeah. And Leighton Hewitt. There were a bunch yesterday. One just like Andy Roddick. I mean, there were so many players that he's outlasted.
Right.
He didn't.
And I would say, I don't know if Sampras outlasted the greats before him, but he got to a level of Grand Slam titles that has now been obliterated, not by Federer, but by Nadal and Djokovic as well. Obliterated is too strong a word, but you know what I'm saying. The fact of the matter is those three are still capable of winning more, as we just saw yesterday. So the gap between these three and anyone that preceded them is going to be so large by the time this is all said and done. And that is incredible to think of, but to your point, the way you phrased it a couple minutes ago and what I was trying to tie in with our reaction in the dressing room after our 11-day power play shift ended was it was spawning an awful lot of discussion about, well, what's the hardest thing in sports? And it, you know, because I'm a believer. I think pitching is maybe the hardest thing to do in sports. Like to constantly be asked to dot the corners at 95 miles an hour to a hitter, right?
Yeah.
And then you could look at it from the flip side, where hitting a baseball might be the hardest thing to do in sports, because if you fail 7 out of 10 times, you can still go to the Hall of Fame. But you still. And there was a social media poll with some article, I think, from Britain that, you know, 1 out of 8 or 1 out of 12 men thought they'd be able to stand in and return a Serena serve, which is ludicrous. But you start thinking about every discipline and what it takes to succeed. And I'm fascinated to sit next to someone who played at the highest level in their sport and how you appreciate what other athletes do in their sport and whether often you guys compared. So, like, we're here. We're on a golf course, right? And a lot of people want to do that. And the mental preparation it takes probably far outranks the athletic ability that's required in golf.
It's funny that you mentioned that. And so as someone that did make it to that level, I still sit and wonder how certain players prepared and how they thought, and it fascinates me because I never did. I never could at that level. I was lucky enough to be able to make it because I had a little bit of skill and willingness to fight. All right. So I understand that requires a certain amount of mental toughness and discipline, but to be a champion and to be one of the greatest, and it's a conversation I have with people all the time, is that, you know, there are people that love to hate certain athletes, mm-hmm. and you don't even have to name them. You just pick an athlete that you hate that is great,
yeah.
And they all have the same quality.
Yeah.
They all have this willingness and this desire to, and this drive to compete and be the best, whether they're the best or not, or they once were, or they still drive to be.
Sure, like the hockey from our era, if you will, if you allow me to come back to your era, given that I'm 10 years older, but like instantly Patrick Waugh comes to mind, right? Because Dominic Hasek was great. But he didn't get the prize here like Patrick Waugh kept getting, and that made Waugh easy to hate. But that's just one example, right? Like, everybody loved to hate Patrick Waugh. Well, what was his foundation? Everything you just said. And what was another cup-winning goaltender, multiple cup-winning goaltender in a decade and a half prior to that? Billy Smith, same thing. Like, hated losing more than winning, right?
Do you know what I find interesting about what you're saying? Is you look at that tennis match yesterday, and you would have thought Djokovic was the ultimate villain.
Ultimate villain. Yep.
But yet you give him another competitor,
yeah,
in that match. Same match, same, mm-hmm. same results, same situations, same amazing circumstances, amazing tennis, yeah, right? And you insert maybe Nadal even, yep, or insert any other tennis player there, and Djokovic is now the hero there that everyone's rooting for. I mean, did it not seem yesterday that, like, he was –
yeah,
he was playing again. He was on the road.
Yeah,
like this guy was on the road in a hostile environment, as hostile as you're going to get in tennis, right? I mean, you know, I can't imagine everybody there in their shirts and ties are really going to be all that mean or nasty. But I mean, you know, just the louder they cheer and when they cheer,
yeah.
To me, I just, going back to just the mental toughness, I couldn't figure out if this was physical endurance that got them through this match. If it was mental toughness, if it was...
You know, it's a combination of everything.
I think tennis players are the greatest athletes in the world.
We had that discussion on the bench as our game was going on. There's, because out of the corner of our eye over at the snack bar at Harbor Center, big monitor, and so the tennis was still going, and we're just sitting there in disbelief, like, now we're going into period three, and we're like, how is this thing? Like, this thing was on way before, yeah, we rolled into the dressing room, which was an hour prior to our face-off. And the greatest thing about tennis is that there's no clock. So all these other sports, and baseball, obviously, you can run into, and World Series saw it last year with an 18-inning game. It's an exception to the rule. But sports that have a clock, like, yeah, okay, you can get the rare multiple overtimes. But, like, these guys and gals constantly can put themselves, you know, in these situations where it's 3-, 4-, 5-hour marathons. But in the fifth hour, yeah, you're being asked to play and expected to play the same as when you were fresh.
But what we're forgetting,
like, it's amazing.
This isn't an accident. It's not like they go out every day, work on their serve and their forehand volley, and then all of a sudden, oh, here, I'm in a five-hour match. They train for this.
I know.
So can you imagine, as I'm sitting there watching this and the match goes on and on and on, I'm thinking to myself, the training that has gone in.
What was the temperature yesterday, by the way? I didn't like.
I don't know. Cold enough for somebody to have a sweater on under a blazer with a buttoned-up shirt and tie. That's a great question.
No, I literally, because normally, I mean, we get so, like, especially when the season starts, the Australian Open, and I mean, you often see them, and U.S. Open especially, right? Like, intense New York humidity and just stifling conditions. And the only fortunate thing is sometimes they'll play deep into the night and it might get a little bit cooler at Flushing. But I don't know. I'm constantly in awe, have been since I was a kid, and I'm glad that tennis has these moments to continue to put their best on a world stage at a good time of year. Like Wimbledon falls at a perfect time of year because like everything else is kind of in between, right? Baseball's just coming out all-star.
You almost turn on the TV and forget it's on, right? Like late June, sure. You're like, Wimbledon's on. And you can never avoid finding out that Wimbledon's on, right? Because it's almost like you said, the only sporting event really going on with any meaning.
The other thing that you said that's important in all of this is that it garners reaction across the board, across the world from athletes of all, you know, sports and people, obviously, of all backgrounds and what have you. But I'm always fascinated to see respective athletes chime in. And, you know, Kyle Opozo tweeted about it and, you know, countless others, and just their respect and appreciation, because it's almost as if they're saying, like, that's something we couldn't do. And they're not, but you know what I mean? Like when you see how they word things and the almost the complete shock and awe that it could be played at that level for that long, it's a real tip of the cap.
Well, how long? Let's have that conversation. I mean, we talk about greatness. We talk about longevity. We talked about Jagr. Now we're talking about Chara. We've talked about old players in sports still dominating.
Yeah.
I don't see any give in Federer's game. In fact,
Serena's, for that matter, right?
Well, Serena Williams, I think, is an ageless wonder.
I think almost in lockstep, though, with Roger. I mean, because you said it, like, what would possibly give you the indication that there's any dip in Federer right now?
I encourage everyone, and
Tom Brady, right? I mean, it's the same thing because everybody's sitting here thinking, when is it going to end with Brady? Well, I don't know. Why would it end? Like, do you see anything remotely resembling a guy that's breaking down?
Well, the thing with Brady, though, like I for certain athletes, I understand, which is I think it's more amazing that Brady's still going because of the pounding that he's taken. Now, I'm not saying that
could take. Doesn't compared to some, but
tennis players don't. These athletes, they take a pounding on their joints. I get it. So the fact that they're able to continue without the knee issues, the backs, the shoulders, the elbows, and all that stuff, fine. But they're not getting the physical poundings from top of their head to their toenails,
right?
On Sundays. But you know, you talk about longevity. I mean, Federer's won 20. He's won 20. You know, I mean, that was what? Djokovic is what, 15th? 16th?
Which is amazing.
So, and Nadal is 18. I you know, Nadal's, I don't count Nadal because he's won, what, 11 at the French? I mean, that's 12 maybe at the French.
Somebody's got to win him.
I don't, you can't win 12 times or 11 times at one and then all of a sudden beat. But listen, amazing yesterday if you were able to see it, what we watched. And I'll say it, Roger Federer for the longest time has been one of my favorite athletes, and not just beyond on court, but how he conducts himself off the court. I mean, I can't, I couldn't, did you see his post game? There's post match.
I read the quotes.
Just some, you know, like he just.
It was amazing.
How he wants to inspire older athletes to believe that they can still compete at a high level.
And I liked just hearing him talk about when the score got to a certain point and the missed opportunities. Like it feels like any time there's a potential for, you know, a tone to come through where he could be, and it's not even like disappointment barely even registers with him. Like, he's just methodical and thoughtful in his answer. He's not devastated by it. Does he want to win? Of course he does, but he understands it. I mean, he just simply recognizes what he was up against and knows full well that they could have just kept playing.
He certainly played off like he didn't care.
Right.
Like, he played off like it was just another, you know, casual day at the office.
Right. Oh, it hurt to, you know, when you had those two opportunities on championship points, right?
I'll try to soon forget it. You know, it's basically
I guess
what he
that's
said.
Easier. easier to do when you've accomplished everything that he has. But I don't think it lessens his actual inner drive when he's in those moments, clearly, based on how long the match went and how much longer it could have gone had they not changed the rules.
Well, let's talk some hockey for a few minutes, because somebody else who is still basking in the glory and just got rewarded for it was Jordan Binnington on a two-year deal at $4.4 million. I don't really have much of a thought on this. I think it's a pretty decent contract for both sides. To me, this is going to sound shocking to say, and I guess it doesn't matter because he just won a Stanley Cup. So you could sign him to whatever, and it doesn't matter. But still surprisingly unproven in the regular season, right? So I'm going to throw that out there as a casual, you know, people perk up and they're like, what do you mean he just won a cup? But end of the day,
his regular season winning percentage is pretty damn good.
No, yes, okay, but I just like to see him through a full season grind where the emotions aren't at an all-time high. You wonder, like, he looks like, it seems like the kind of guy that, you know, excels under pressure. Under the pressure that he puts on himself, not even the pressure that the moment is, he puts it on himself, whether it's after a game or before a game or a game day. He seems to love it.
But he'll be a guy, if he stays on the same path, will fall into that category of one that people probably, I don't want to say hate, but he'll have a lot of people rooting against him, right? Because people won't love the attitude that he came in with. And guess what? He, again, falls right in line with some of those others that I talked about and just win. And,
well, okay,
you know,
so,
because you know what I mean? Like, he talked down to reporters in the sense of not getting caught up in their line of questioning. And then he delivered the big bomb during the Stanley Cup parade, right? You want some emotion? Here's some emotion. We're bleeping Stanley Cup champions, right? And so he knows he's playing the game. But his makeup is such that there's just nothing phasing this guy. And I'll tell you, like, I still marvel at how they dodged or got themselves out of some real tough spots. The biggest one being that one against San Jose when they lost in overtime on the hand pass, and everyone, aside from in that moment where there was some stick swinging and chasing down of the officials, from the next day on, how they all handled that situation and completely parked it. And it started with Berube and it followed from top to bottom after that. This team was pretty impressive. Very, very impressive as far as just, and they were down against the Bruins too on a couple of occasions.
One of the questions JJ has in here in the rundown is how long does the Stanley Cup window stay open for the top contenders? And
they weren't even a top contender.
They weren't even
contender. How do you answer the question? Like,
well,
I mean, I don't know.
I'd say a decade, because weren't they? If you say take a decade window, the first half of that decade that I'm giving you, they were definitely a favorite, right? So to see them winning now is the biggest surprise.
This decade was, and especially with the rise of Tarasenko, and you know who, unfortunately, then when they didn't win in the playoffs for too long, it was about can Tarasenko lead them. Well, guess what? It's never about one guy, and until you build the team the right way and get a lot of good fortune, because clearly that's what it takes in team sports. You need an awful lot of things to go right.
In the primes of Pietrangelo and Bomeister too?
Sure, because
primes, Bomeister's
well,
maybe Bomeister a little...
Well, Bomeister passed it, but Pietrangelo 10 years into the career before he tastes it, and if you'd said that with everything you just said, like, yeah, this decade was meant for St. Louis because they had a guy like him, because they had what they thought was a team that was right on the cusp, which is why they went out and traded with Buffalo to get Miller and Ott at the deadline.
Absolutely.
And guess what? They couldn't beat Chicago. It happens. Yeah. And now
the Chicago's fallen off after about a decade of running the table.
Sometimes you
Someone's just got to,
was the window, did St. Louis believe that the window was still, I don't know.
Well, I feel like Nashville's still hanging on by a
thread. Of course they are. They're only a couple of years removed from getting to the final and losing to Pittsburgh. Yeah. So with so much of the core, and especially the defense, but the goaltender too, now that the addition of Duchesne, I think a lot of people would expect them to be in the hunt, and they're in that division. Winnipeg was a popular choice the last couple of years to go deep in the playoffs. Winnipeg was picked by many to beat St. Louis this year in the opening round, but I didn't see it that way only because of the way both were trending for not just the weeks leading into the playoffs, but for months. Like, St. Louis had just been going too good for too long. Yeah, there were questions that were unanswered in the sense of what will Binnington do when the playoffs actually begin. But from a team play standpoint, how could you argue with what they had done the last 3.5 months heading into the playoffs?
Well, I've been trying to force feed a conversation into the show for the last week. You've been with us,
yeah.
And it's a conversation that you can have today or next month. It doesn't matter who falls out of the playoffs, and maybe it's premature now, just because
there's still too many unknowns.
Right. Yeah. But you know what? It's fun to have the conversation early because guess what? We got all summer. But my point being, I look early and I think Pittsburgh, but I only think that because of the Stanley Cup contender window. Right, and that's the only reason. And I'm not saying yes,
you,
and I'm not saying no. I'm just saying that I'm starting to have those conversations with Pittsburgh, or about Pittsburgh now because.
But you love Crosby.
I know, and that's why I say the longer they keep staying a contender, is the more baffling it is to me with the 10, 12. I mean, they started winning what in oh they were. Really
08-09, they went back to back final.
Yes,
won one, lost one.
Yeah, so
or
that's
lost one, won
so one. That's 11 years.
Yeah.
So we're going on 11 years with a team. I mean, Chicago didn't dominate for a full decade. They started to tail off the last few years. It was about 8 or 9 years.
They won 3 in 5, 6 years. 10, 13, 15.
So do we give it – is a decade a fair timetable for a contender window to stay open? Or, I mean, is it – I mean, a true contender. Like, would you say that going into
but
this year –
But I think the question is what is a contender anymore? And St. Louis just proved that because at no point were they considered one. And is that not the way, especially with hockey, that we're likely to go?
I'd like to think that can win any given year. That would be the best case scenario.
So that pops into my head. And then as I verbalize it, I think, okay, that's wrong because obviously as long as Crosby's playing, the Penguins are in that window. So I get it. Like, the question certainly has merit. I just don't know how I don't know how to define the window, quite frankly. Because what's Colorado's window?
Well, I guess Detroit's was 25 years.
Well, that's the thing. Like, St. Louis got caught in this decade of not being able to beat Chicago. But when they're run, like, they were, prior to the Red Wings, they were the longest active consecutive playoff appearance in professional sports. They went like 25 years before they fell out. Remember how good they were around 2000 with Joel Quenneville coaching and Chris Pronger on their blue line? Remember how good the Blues were then? But they couldn't win. They couldn't win then, and then they had to reset, and they went through some tough times, and then sure enough just found themselves in a really tough conference and particularly a very tough often first or second round matchup with Chicago. I don't know. It's hard to define the window. I think, like, once you get those superstars in place and they've got some traction, I guess that's when the clock starts ticking. Colorado, I think, is now in that because they've surprised a little bit.
Well, how about Boston? Where does Boston run?
I don't like bringing this up, but when Buffalo and the fan base was excited about getting Jack Eichel in 15, everybody thought Boston was going the wrong way. They had 3 first-rounders in succession that year. Didn't necessarily hit on all 3 of them. Louis DeBrusque's kid was one of them, and Jake, who's turned into a pretty good player. But guess what? They didn't go down. They stayed and went back up. Like, so... did everybody think their window was just being slammed shut? They were this close to winning the Cup again, which would have put them in a category of, what, 4 teams winning multiple Cups this decade? L.A., Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Boston? Like, so I don't know. How does the window ever close when Sidney Crosby is in the lineup? How does the window ever close when Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand are in the lineup? Not to mention a guy who I think has been unfairly cast as an underachiever on the big stage in Tuukka Rask. I think he's a terrific goaltender, could have won this year very easily. In fact, was garnering some consideration for Conn Smythe. So, I don't know. I don't know how you answer the question. I feel like if at some point your marquee players get to that level, I feel like the window is now open for as long as they are part of your organization.
Well, just so we're clear, you're not under oath here, so there doesn't necessarily have to be an answer, right? Like, we're just spitballing. It's a sports talk show. It's a topic of conversation. If you have the answer, tweet at the Instigator76, at Duffer Sabres, or at Danny Gare. Danny,
yes.
You have a Twitter handle?
No
handle.
at tickets from my teammates. Hey, you got some tickets? Need some tickets? Who needs tickets? I got six. Danny Gare coming up next right here with Sarah Dina, I believe, is going to join us, the director of marketing for units. And we're live at Fox Valley Club, as I've been told to make sure that I tell it like it is. Fox Valley Club, units, golf tournament, Danny Gare and friends, instigators, WGR 550 and MSG. We will be right back. Andrew Peters and Brian Duff.
We're back with more of the Instigators with Andrew Peters and Craig Rabe.
No Craig Rabe, Brian Duff down there at the end and squeezed between us, Danny Gare, friend of the show. Friend of the show, also no stranger to the show, Sarah Dina. How are you? Director of marketing for units. And we are live at Fox Valley Club for the, how many years is this now?
Sixth year. Danny Gare and Friends golf outing. And yeah, and it's all to make a little more awareness and help raise money, Sarah, for units and what you do from Western New York. I had a very good friend that turned me on to this great non-for-profit, John Dandies, who had so many titles with Rich Products, an old friend, had a kidney organ replacement.
Yep.
And John said, this is a great organization. I met the CEO, Mark Simon, about 8 years ago, and this is our sixth year. We decided to do a golf tournament. And our cup, which we started last year because we lost a very special friend.
Closest you've ever been to a cup, yeah, right, Danny?
Yeah, come on, 87 Edmonton.
That's, I had a little hand on that one.
Oh, that's true, too. You know what? I tried to throw a cliche joke out there, and it backfires. You know why?
If he's going to include me in Danny Gare and Friends, I'm going to suck up to him all day long.
He is. You're all part of it.
Sarah, one thing you'll learn is you never try to pull the wool over Duffer's eyes.
Yeah, Duffer's too sharp.
He is way too sharp. He's like a book of knowledge over there. Anyway, Danny.
But this is our cup here, and we lost a very special friend close to the unit's family, and that was John's wife, Marcy, a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And we named this the Gift of Life Cup. It's dedicated to loving memory of Marcy Dandy. So we had a winner last year, and it was the Riley Fund. Chris
Collins
won it. So, yeah, it's up for grabs today.
Well, let me ask you this, Sarah. Sarah Dina, Director of Marketing for units. I was just saying, I said, please feel free to announce your next blood drive. Mm-hmm. And you said, oh, we have one every day. And Duffer says, yeah, I literally see
stuff. It's just one of those things, and not in a bad way, but if you, like, there, you see signage everywhere.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's just like, and I don't want to say random, but it is. Like, I mean, you could be going anywhere and just of the corner of your eye, there it is. And I love, like, how did it, was it always that way, or is it just more visible now?
I mean, we try to be as visible as possible, of course. There's such a need for blood. It's a constant need for our hospitals locally. Mm-hmm. We're a community blood bank, which makes us a lot different from other blood banks. We collect here in Western New York, and all the blood we collect stays local. Mm-hmm. So it goes to hospitals like Oshai Children's, ECMC, which makes a huge difference. And it means a lot to Western New Yorkers to be able to give back to others in need. So we hold drives 7 days a week at schools, churches, businesses, community events, with the Sabres, with the Bills. We have great partnerships with everyone, and it's really amazing the commitment that our community has to giving back through units.
Can I ask you a question? What do you say to the people, like myself, that want to give blood, but I'm afraid of needles?
Suck it up.
Yes.
Really, suck it up. There are people in need. Every day.
I have a bad story about giving blood one time. I passed out.
Toughy.
Had to change my pants.
I thought you were toughy.
You know,
I thought you were a tough guy.
That's not a joke either.
You know what's interesting is we find these big guys are the ones who are the biggest babies when it comes to donating.
Wow.
We see this a lot.
Wimpy.
Well. But, I mean, think about all the kids at Oshai
right.
The kids at, or, you know, people at ECMC who need blood every single day for either a trauma, for treatment from cancer, for surgery. I mean, there's so many reasons why someone needs blood, could need blood down the road. So to be able to, you know, suck it up for 10 minutes, it's really
now,
that
listen,
fast.
I just want
pretty
you to know that
too.
I was only using myself as an example because I want everybody else out there to feel comfortable and feel like they're in good company. But I'm not afraid of needles. I was just saying that.
Good. But it's quick, it's painless, and you're doing such an amazing thing. One blood donation could potentially save up to 3 lives right here in your community. So, you know, close your eyes and just get it over with.
Yeah. Yep.
Duffer, you and me next time?
Yeah, I mean, just
Blood Brothers.
Wow. Okay.
Well, the Sabres have a great blood drive.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Sabres and Bills have a big blood drive. You've been to it.
Yeah.
It's amazing what it does, and the awareness is what we try to do here for our tournament.
What do you think is the biggest apprehension for people not to be involved?
Fear.
Yeah.
100% fear. Mm-hmm. People don't want to have the needle in their arm. I think there's this perception that it's that it's painful, that it's a scary thing to do, that they're going to get sick, that they're going to pass out. But we really focus a lot on education and preparing people for the blood drive and letting them know what's involved with making a blood donation, that we fully check you out before we even put you in a chair to take the blood out of your arm, to make sure that you are healthy enough to do so, that you're in a condition where you're going to feel great afterwards.
Well, that might be my fear right there.
What's that?
In condition?
just find out that I'm not in shape or something. Like, hey, Andrew,
your blood's no good here.
Your arms are
like,
limp.
Oh my god,
your arms are a little limp here.
Right. Well, honestly, that's kind of why I asked the question, because I don't know if it's the fear of the needle. I think a lot of people just don't think they're a good person to donate.
A real candidate to donate.
So I agree.
How do you continue to try to convince people?
Well, and again, education is key. And we really tell people, and this is for actually for blood donation and organ and tissue donation as well. We tell people, don't ever rule yourself out.
Right.
There are so many, you know, different factors involved in all those types of donation. Don't rule yourself out. That's what we're here for. We're here to educate you, so you can gain knowledge about what you can, cannot do. We're here. We're the health professionals. So we're here to make sure that you're in a position to donate and give the best donation you can.
Yeah. And awareness is a big part of it. That's what we try to do here with this tournament, is to make people aware. DMV, you know, with our licenses where you can check off and get any organ donation.
Do you have an example for us? Sarah Dina, Director of Marketing from Units, we're down at the Fox Valley Club for Danny Garen Friends Golf Tournament. Do you have an example of maybe a story that you can share where it was a successful story where somebody, you saved a life, that you might have off the top of your head?
Yes. I mean, we really save lives every day, but there was one story recently, actually. We were contacted last fall by a grandmother, actually, who wanted us to know how much it meant to her that we are a community blood bank, because her granddaughter, Evelyn, was born last summer and was born with some major medical problems, major intestinal, GI problems, has had to have close to 10 surgeries since she was born last year and has needed a significant amount of blood. Mm-hmm. And how much it meant to her that the blood was available at Oshai Children's when this little baby needed it. So she just turned a year old. She's already had, again, a handful of full body blood transfusions because of these medical problems she was born with. And they really feel like, this grandmother feels like, her granddaughter would not be here with us today if it were not for the blood that was available and for the generous donors of Western New York who come out on a regular basis and donate.
The blood drives are one thing. You mentioned the organ and tissue donation. Like, I feel like when I first became familiar with Units, for whatever reason, I was thinking of it more from the organ donation side. Mm-hmm. Like, where's the balance? And also, how has social media impacted this? Because I feel like on any given day, you can find yourself seeing someone's story.
Oh yeah.
In need of this. Right. In need of this. And it's not, and that clearly always existed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I feel like maybe now we have a better chance of spreading the word a lot quicker.
Yes, and social media has been huge for us. It's been huge for the industry. There's a constant need. There's over 115,000 people waiting right now for a transplant, about 10,000 here in New York State alone. So it's huge, and it's constant, and it continues to grow. So the more we can raise awareness, talk about the need, and then share these stories on social media about the positive outcome of donation. You know, you see these honor walks. There's been a lot of coverage lately about these honor walks, these amazing families who say yes at the worst time in their lives, but then they're going on, these donors are going on to save potentially 8 people's lives, sometimes up to 75, depending on what they're able to donate. And it really is amazing. I mean, these really are heroes. But it's so important that we're out there talking about it, because I think there's, you know, a lot of times that thought, well, oh, they're going to enroll so I don't have to. They're going to help save a life so I don't have to. But we need everyone involved.
And Danny, you just mentioned the DMV. So, Sarah, I wonder, like, statistically, what has happened over the years? Has units seen an increased willingness year after year or decade after decade? Is the message setting in? Is the fear, and everybody's got them for their own reasons, but the fear to maybe have checked that box at some point in your life, is that now disappearing? Are more and more and more people willing to do it?
Yeah, I wouldn't say the fear is disappearing yet, but I think we're definitely making huge strides. And especially here in Western New York, we have a great relationship with the DMV, with our hospitals, with our schools. And we found that education and raising awareness is key. Mm-hmm. Our 8 counties of Western New York are actually the highest in the entire state for registry, which is huge. That's really huge. And that makes a huge difference when we're in the hospitals and it's time to have a discussion about with families about donation. Mm-hmm. If they're already aware of donation, enrolled, have had a conversation with their loved ones, it makes all the difference in the world. So we here in Western New York have definitely seen positive outcomes of all the work we've been doing with the community. Mm-hmm. It has definitely
made
a difference.
See, you should be really proud.
I'm very proud. I'm honored to be a part of this non-for-profit. I mean, I was introduced at 8-9 years ago, mm-hmm. and just enjoy doing the golf outing. As Sarah mm-hmm. says, it's really a lot about awareness, education, so forth and so on. And to get the people to come out, as you know, it's always hard. There's so many golf tournaments for this charity, for that charity. But it's been great that I have a few friends around, because we call it Danny Aaron Friends. And some of my closest friends that I played with are celebrities. You guys are going to help out today. Guys like Donnie Luce, Terry Martin, you know, Derek Smith, Dan Dunleavy's here. Renny Robert is going to be here. Lou Pacone. You know, just a lot of guys that I really feel that have helped out throughout the years and continued with really, you know, just it's time of their day. They take out and they give their time. And that I'm appreciative of that, and I know units is too.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I can't believe all the names you just mentioned that still live in the
area. I'm not even done yet.
I know you're not. That still live in the area.
Yeah.
That's the best part. And with what Sarah said about how this area has really, you know, become at the forefront mm-hmm. of all this.
Right.
I think it all kind of goes hand in hand here, right? And that's you know, it's a great place to live, and we start doing some things that we should be doing, and it just enhances mm-hmm. the whole experience of why we live here.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, I'll just mention a few, like chefs. Louis Bilateri is here. He comes and brings Eaton Office Supply, ECMC, Collider, Lolly, Lifecell, Pyramid, Riley, Stents Carlson. I mean, I can go on and mm-hmm. on. And they're here every year, mm-hmm. and it's mm-hmm. just awesome. Their support, it means a lot to all of us, and certainly helps, you know, the community.
It does.
Yeah, we forgot somebody.
We appreciate that. I forgot a lot of people.
The instigators.
The instigators. I got my hat on, and I wanted to thank you at the end for coming here. You got the best setting you've ever had.
Yes,
right,
this is
JJ?
Unbelievable.
It's pretty damn
Yeah,
good.
You guys can Holy come cow. Here only once a year, though.
Do you ever, Sarah, if you ever want to know how to ruffle Danny's feathers, all you have to do is ask him, say, oh, sorry, Duffer, I just pulled your cord. All you have to do is say, Danny, how much money would you have made if you were a UFA?
We just had that conversation earlier.
79.80.
She brought it up earlier. I'm going, God, don't bring it up. Don't make me mad. No, I'm just kidding.
11 o'clock, we're going to make Rennie Bobby mad, because I'm going to ask I'm gonna ask Rennie Robert the same question. He had 100 points.
Yeah, he did.
I love.
If he's here by 11. I'm not sure if he's here yet. You may have to
He'll be in the last
grab
segment.
Someone else. Yeah, but. No, it's to each its own, but I really like what Jason Botterill's been doing, by the way. Yeah. We talked last week.
We were at the GR tournament.
Uh-huh. And, you know, I mean, it was just what he's done. He just continues to stockpile, and, mm-hmm. and adding players. And
hey, Danny. You
know, he's got some movements. No, he's got currency, I guess, is
what they say. I need to throw Duffer down there under the bus, but not in a bad way. We had him.
Wait a minute. Can there be a good way to be under the bus?
Not in a bad way.
Yes, because the tire that's going to roll over you is already flat.
I'm like Bill.
It won't hurt so much.
Petey, you're going to put me where Bill Stewart put the player in the undercarriage.
Oh, it's, yeah.
Like not under the wheels, but in the luggage compartment.
All the way. Tell story about a junior coach that threw a Russian player. Didn't have his papers. Threw him under the bus, literally with the gears to go. Then they got caught
across the border.
I had a guy named Tommy Martin who worked my hockey school got traded. in for a bus. Seriously, we call him Tommy Bus Martin.
Oh my
it's
God!
Like the, Junior. It's like the movie with Will Ferrell where they traded the guy for a washing machine. Traded my washing machine for Monix.
So how were you going to throw me under the bus?
He did his dry erase boards.
Oh gosh,
last week.
Oh, you did.
And so did John Vogel from The Athletic. By the way, sorry, got to throw Johnny Vogel under the bus here too. Neither one of them had our boy Zemgus. We're the only guys giving Zemgus a true shot right now.
I'm a big fan of Zemgus. But, hey, you know, he's a guy that just continues, you know, for whatever, gives effort. I know that a lot of fans – I mentioned this, it just – to me, I think it's depth again. That's what it is. And depth is important. We saw what Boston went through throughout the season, and look what they ended up, you know, almost winning a cup with it. So
To Duffer's defense, I have to say this to everyone who perked up. To Duffer's defense, the reason why he didn't have Zemgus on the roster, and I'm gonna use your words perfectly here, is because he feels that he will be moved in a bigger deal. Isn't that why?
No, because I felt it was July 7th, and at that moment in time, he wasn't on the group, in the group, but. There's a very good chance he still will be. I was just living in the moment, so.
But
yes, okay, well then you're right. He also could be part
could
of a deal.
Be, yeah.
But so could
maybe that was
so
John
could
Vogel's
just
reason.
So could just about anybody
people.
On that board.
Yeah,
that's the
you're
whole,
right.
Well, that's what
whole
I do,
point.
Sarah. Yeah. I just misquote everybody and then let everyone else figure it out.
It's called instigating.
It is.
Instigator, instigators.
Hey,
love you to
hey,
be here.
If you're
thank
not misquoting
you
somebody, you're not in the media. We'll be right back. Instigators, WGR 550 and MSG live from Fox Valley Club. And we're here for the Units Golf Tournament. Danny Garrett, friends. Thank you, Sarah Dina. Thank you, Danny Garrett.
Thanks, Petey.
Happy to be here.
Thanks, Duffer.
See you on the links. We'll be back in a few minutes.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hockey talk that hits. This is the Instigators with Andrew Peters and Craig Rabe.
All right, when you're a legend like Brian Duff, people just deliver things to you. I would have liked a water in this scorcher of a day. We sit here in the sun as you have a zip-up jacket on. What's wrong with you, man?
Cold. Drinking a lot of ice water.
Okay. All right. Icing from the inside out. That's what they used to do. That's what they used to call it. When
had iced coffee before this. I just got ice in my veins.
Some beers after the game. Guys would be sitting at the back of the bus in the American League and, you know, they'd be like, do you have any liquid Tylenol? And they throw them a beer. Oh,
here's the thing. We had this discussion last week. I am the epitome of the aging left-hander waiting in the bullpen with the satin warm-up jacket on, and it's 90 degrees out, right? Because you got to keep the limbs loose and ready to go. We got a big tournament. I got to stay warm.
Hey, you brought up baseball. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talked about everything that took place over the weekend.
Amazing weekend. Sports. Oh, and by the way, I meant to segue to this super quick when you were talking about Wimbledon. Like, congratulations to Olga Himalev, Buffalo Tennis Hall of Fame inductee yesterday.
Yes.
Phenomenal. Like, and if you don't know her story and all her accomplishments, I would encourage you to, you know, just type in her name on social media and find out the story as to why she was honored last night. I mean, we might have witnessed one of the, well, I'm convinced I'll never see it again in my lifetime. I don't know how it could ever happen again. On the heels of the tragic passing of Tyler Skaggs with the Los Angeles Angels a couple weeks ago, you know, the Angels were on the road when he passed away, then the All-Star break, and they come home to play their first game at Angel Stadium. And, you know, Tyler's mother, Debbie, throws out the first pitch, which is, you know, incredible in itself. But to know the Skaggs story and the fact that she was his coach, right? Like, she's all in on baseball, softball her whole life. Tremendous athlete. Throws a perfect strike. In that moment where you are, I mean, you're in front of 40,000 plus, and for her son, delivers that. And from that moment on, the Angels do the almost impossible, and that is throw a combined no-hitter. They put up 7 runs in the first inning. Mike Trout drives in 6 in the game. They win 13-0, and then with all the players, as everyone knows by now, playing with Skaggs 45 as their jerseys for that night, then lay those jerseys on the mound and walk off the field after the game. You'll never how could you ever expect that to be duplicated in the history of life and sports? Like, that exact moment. Like, it's one thing to go out and pay tribute to a fallen
teammate.
That sequence
of events, for sure, yeah.
Right.
Incredible.
That sequence of, that's exactly how you'd have to look at it. There's no way you could ever have that sequence of events. We talk about honoring those who have passed. It's harder when people are younger and death comes unexpectedly. But we also live in a world where I think we're getting better at celebrating life. And there could be no greater celebration of that young man's life than what the Angels did as a team, almost with the blessing and the guidance of Tyler's mother throughout that evening.
Are they one of the better teams in baseball?
No, and that's the thing. Like, this is the second tragedy that has affected their pitching staff, and Nick Adenhart was killed by a drunk driver 10 years ago. Was a huge piece for them moving forward. They've been playing better. Trout is obviously having an MVP season. They are.
You still love that guy.
They're still in. Well, everybody loves him. It's impossible not to. I mean, he's just a perfect player, right?
Well, you showed me that video the other day, and he.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's a pretty cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just.
I mean, if that's really him, the way they portray him in that video,
He is who he is. He's never changed. It's just, you know. The Angels aren't out of it. They're a handful back in the wild card. They're not considered one of the great teams. Pitching, sadly, has been the problem because, of course, Ohtani came on the scene last year as both a pitcher and a hitter and now has been relegated to just hitting because of, you know, the health issues that he had last year. So, you know, they're still struggling to find pitching. So, obviously, when a young pitcher like Skaggs passes away, that just is compounding the problem, which, of course, is a terrible way to say it. But I think you understand what I'm saying is that they're not only looking to fill his place on the roster, but they need to add to it. And I just can't get over how incredibly perfect what an emotionally difficult night would be. And it turned into a night that everyone.
How did he die?
Well, at this point, I believe it's still, you know, pending results of an autopsy. The last I read was that, you know, the belief is natural causes, but I don't know.
So, in his hotel room?
In Texas, in Arlington. So.
It's crazy.
But honestly, though, it's tragic, his passing, but I'm more about how do you take that moment? And the Angels have taken it and just done, you know, they've turned it into something people will never forget. That's hard to do. And as we were talking about athletes reacting to Wimbledon, seeing the athletes who are active in the game reacting at 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning on social media. You know, like, it was baseball's family all in disbelief, but in great appreciation, in love with what the Angels were able to do for the Skaggs family. Like, remarkable, remarkable night.
We'll end that hour, or this hour, on that note. A phenomenal story. It was an amazing story. Some amazing stories in sports just over the weekend. Not so much hockey, but definitely, you know, in the world of sports. And great story, Duffer. I'm glad you shared it.
I'm glad I got to see the end of it. I was aware of it and then did not, and then kind of tuned it out and then just happened to join in for the culmination of the no-hitter. It was perfect.
When we return, hopefully on set with Rennie Robert, I'm going to ask him. You know, well, I'll ask these old guys, how much money would they have made? Like Rennie, 74, 75, Rennie, 40 goals, 60 assists. Sure, you go to arbitration and they might say, it's all your line mates. But no, man, you would have been making $12.5 million, Rennie. We'll be right back, Instigators, with $100 million man, Rennie Robert. WGR 550 and MSG.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.